Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome again to Inside Scoop Live. A very happy new year to you. I am your host, Juanita Watson, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. This is our second interview with author Jerry Pollack. I had the pleasure of talking with Jerry a few months ago about his book, Messiah, and it was very clear at that time that we needed to have him back on the show to talk about his first book, Divinely Inspired, which is really his remarkable story of his own personal spiritual awakening. So Jerry Pollack is currently Professor Emeritus at the Oral Biology and Pathology Department at the State University of New York at Stony Brook on Long Island. Jerry was born in Toronto, Canada, and his childhood, teenage, and young adult years were really emotionally ravaged in an unloving, non-nurturing parental environment. And at the age 50, he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And despite an unyielding anxiety and a neurotic repression of feelings, Jerry actually succeeded in academics with a bachelor's and master's of science in pharmacy. His interest in scientific research and a Canadian scholarship to study abroad caused him to leave Toronto in 1966 for Israel. He completed his PhD in biophysics in 1969 at the Weizmann Institute of Science and then spent 4 years in the microbiology department at New York University Medical Center. Jerry came to his spirituality later in life at the age of 57, and he is 67 today. He has written 2 spiritual books and has merged his science with his spirituality. And always a pleasure to talk. Welcome back to the show, Jerry.
Thank you very much, Juanita. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Great. So you have just released, reissued, Divinely Inspired. It was originally written when?
It was originally published in 2003.
Okay.
I did the research for it back in the, around late 99, 2000, 2001. And then wrote it, and then it was my first try at an arts book. I was a scientist, and I've written a lot of scientific articles for journals, but never anything in the arts field.
And your personal experience, too.
And my personal experience, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's talk a little about this merging of science and spirituality. How did this really come together for you, the relationship of the two?
Well, I think you never know in life really what you do in life, where that takes you. And everything in life is a part of everything to follow in life. And the science really was a great preparation for being able to think, logically and use reasoning, because you had to apply for scientific grants. And you had to lay out your hypothesis and how you were going to achieve your plan. And normally that logical reasoning is something that may go against you, because in order to have faith, you have to let go of that intelligence, let go of that reasoning. Mm-hmm. A person with a logical mind, it doesn't have to be in science, sometimes finds himself in a very difficult position to have faith, because faith is something that you can't grasp onto. It's not something you can touch, see, smell, hear.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the science makes it a little bit harder. But there were some great scientists who actually had both science and faith. Einstein went back and forth. Isaac Newton, who discovered gravity, kind of believed that you couldn't explain how the planets were aligned. If the planets were aligned just a little bit off, then you wouldn't have the temperature that you have on Earth today. Although it's pretty cold in Alaska. A friend of mine just wrote me it was minus 62 degrees in Alaska. I can't function. I'm here in Florida. I can't function above 60.
Yeah. That's so funny.
But anyway, the science, I'll always be a scientist. And once you... But I have an unshakable belief in God, and I've merged the two. You can't separate the science and the spirituality for me. And if you do make the leap of faith, then your intelligence, you get your intelligence back. You abandon it temporarily, and then you get your intelligence back, and it stands alongside your faith.
It's It to me, it almost sounds like if you really delve into one on its deepest level, it's always going to somewhat inform the other. Like, you can't have just pure science. You can't be coming from a pure scientific or a pure spiritual background. There's always going to be questions that the other informs. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that does make sense. But it gives you the science. If you take your mind a little bit away from your human brain, and that's pretty hard to do because the human brain is all we have, then I looked at God as a scientist. I mean, we can look at him as in a lot of different ways, and you have to kind of let go. That's what you have to kind of do in spirituality and faith. You have to let go. You have to kind of, when it's something like giving into a feelings. It's, a lot of times with anxiety, we run away from the feelings, but often it's easier to just kind of let go and go into the feeling. So even though it is difficult and you're pulling from either one side or another, the science or the spirituality, if you kind of let go a little bit, then you can move in the direction of science. And I kind of did that and believe that you know, God is the master scientist who kind of created this whole world. This whole world to me is an experiment. It's an experiment on becoming good and creating a beautiful world, but that hasn't really happened.
Mm-hmm. Something's gone a little awry in that.
A little bit.
So I know one of your favorite topics of discussion is the whole idea of creation and evolution.
Right.
Right? I mean, you talk about that in Divinely Inspired. I know that on your website and your blog, you've written about it. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts.
Well, I think we tend to go the pendulum in this world where we're either on one side of the issue or on the other side of the issue. And I think I was saying before that we kind of have a timeline because we have our human brain, so we think in terms of a timeline. Well, if you try, I mean, we can never capture the essence of God and we can't really humanize him, but I don't think he operates on the same timeline. So for him, the 7 days of creation or the 14 billion years when the universe was created or the 4.5 billion years when the Earth was created or the 3.8 billion years when the first fossils of microorganisms were seen or even 100,000 years ago when Homo sapiens or humans came into existence, for him there's no timeline. And therefore, I wouldn't call it a metaphor, but I believe he was the creator. He was back there at the time when the universe was created, 14 billion years ago, and he was with us at creation when Adam and Eve were brought into this world as grown-ups, really, as young adults. And he doesn't operate kind of the same way that we do. So if we take ourselves away from our human brain, and I think Einstein, I've quoted this before, but Einstein said that if you try and solve a problem at the level the problem was created, you may not be able to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of come at it from at a different angle. So I believe that all along this was God's plan, and that
to confound us a little bit.
Yeah, to confound us and make life interesting.
Yeah.
He gave us doubt, he gave us fantasy, he gave us intelligence, he gave us thought, he gave us language, he gave us inquisitiveness. And he was the first one in the 7 days of creation to mention the word day. We use the word day, and it's in the 7 days of creation. He talked about work and rest, and he talked about all of the creatures that were on earth. Interestingly enough, he talked about animals. But he never talked about, say, bacteria or microorganisms because he didn't really want to spoil the fun. He never, even though he had all these prophets back at the time of the Hebrew Bible and the Christian Bible, they could only see what was right there at their present time. He may have shown a few people, like Moses, kind of like the future, but he never wanted to spoil our fun, so microorganisms and bacteria and the science of bacteriology didn't come in until about the 1500s.
Interesting.
So it's kind of very interesting. And even when they talked about war, they only talked about spears and they didn't have guns. They didn't have rockets.
No, no.
They didn't have any of these missiles back then. So that's what they talked about. So you have to kind of look at it and take it from where they were.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of creation, that was also the time when civilizations were forming in Egypt and Mesopotamia. And that was the time when you were now getting a crowded society. So even though God didn't show himself 14 billion years ago or 100,000 years ago when humans, or maybe it's even 150,000 years ago when they came out of Africa, he does do it at the time 5,760 years ago in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve, because now you're getting villages, you're being able to farm, you're being able to store food. And so now's the time when man is going to come in contact with man. And even when man was in caves and living in distant areas, they were still killing each other.
Right.
So it was an opportunity, and I think that's what creation is. But I think God was, he is, and he will be. And the question that I had a few years ago was a very interesting question for my colleague when I was writing Divinely Inspired. He didn't believe. He was an atheist. And he said to me, and where did God come from? And that really threw me back in 2002, say. But that's one thing we can't do. I mean, that requires a divine answer, and that will happen when God comes at the time of the Messianic Age, which is what we talked about in our last interview, the Messiah interviews. So at that time, he'll make himself known, and then you'll maybe get that answer as to where he came from.
Or maybe not.
Or maybe not. Or maybe not.
So, Divinely Inspired, let's go into this book a little bit. Now, you talk a lot about your childhood.
Yeah.
And you grew up in a very dysfunctional, very non-nurturing environment. And so I'd like you to just talk to us a little about your childhood growing up, and really why looking into your past was such an important part of your whole healing journey and your spiritual awakening.
Okay, kind of a tall order, but I'll do my best.
Okay, yeah, can you do that in 5 minutes?
You know how long-winded I am.
Yeah.
I'll try my best here. Well, I think a lot of people have it a lot worse than me. And I appreciate my parents, and I love my parents. I forgive them because of the love, but I don't forgive them because of the way they hurt me. They didn't have the same needs as me. My father himself was a victim of his own neurosis, his growing up. My mother, she was a narcissist. She's living today. She's 88 and a half and living with dementia or Alzheimer's in a facility, a nursing facility up in Toronto. And I spend more quality time when I go up to see her now than I ever spent when I was a child. It's kind of interesting that last time I was up there, they had a singer there, and my mother and I were holding hands, and we were singing together.
Well, that's something.
It was exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
This was not in Divinely Inspired, but I appreciate my parents, my family, because it's brought me to the place where I am. What I can't forgive is the fact the way they hurt me. My father really never showed me the kind of love that I needed. I needed him as well as my mother. And I think he always kind of expected, as I got older, to show him the love, fulfill his needs without giving it to me.
Mm-hmm.
He had a generous heart, my father, but he just didn't want me around. And he himself had clinical depression. They called it nervous breakdowns back then. There was constant fighting in the house. We lived in a house where there were at least five other people living. It was, they were renting, maybe six, renting the house. I lived in a place where there was no privacy. I had, my brother and I shared this tiny dresser and with very little clothes, where my mother, she bought clothes to the hilt. And, she was never someone who, she was like a little bit like a lioness in protecting her children, but she really wasn't. I mean, my mother was me first.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the kind of person who would crush you. In fact, when I was having problems at the university, when I was a young faculty member, she said to me, Jerry, you have to stomp them out. You can't. That was her attitude. And anybody who came in her way did do that. And I came down with headaches at age four, which later turned into migraines. And I was so frightened. I was so vulnerable. I was trying to survive in that household. And the only way I could do that, I totally repressed feelings. I lived with anxiety. I never expressed anything. I had pain. I had headaches. I had everything. So nothing was ever expressed. I was quiet as a mouse. You know, I tried. My mother had no need to be a mother. She didn't know what it was like to nurture. And my father was a victim of his own neurosis. And since writing Divinely Inspired, which what I wrote in the Messiah interviews, I've done regression therapy as part of my primal therapy. And I've been back in my mother's womb. And so that's
incredible, the therapy that you have done and how much you've remembered and how really that's just been crucial in your recovering from it.
Yeah, because you have to. If you repress, if you're someone who represses your feelings, then that's going to create tremendous stress in you.
Oh, yes. And in your entire life.
Your entire life. And it's like a sentence. It's like a sentence that you have to carry this burden with you. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize that some of the things that you repress but you can't remember until you go into your subconscious, say in aggressive therapy, then you remember it. That eventually, very, very, very slowly, for me, 25 years, will gradually free you because you'll go back and you'll connect to the very energy of the moment. It's not like sitting here talking or even talking with a traditional therapist. You can't do that if you're going back and forth. In primal therapy, you go into a dark room and you lie down. Your therapist is with you, beside you, and all you can do is just feel your feelings. And your body takes you away, and it does it in its own time. So you go through all kinds of things.
Now, are you basically retrieving parts of yourself that you have kind of cut yourself off from or detached from? Is that what that therapy is about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're bringing all of those memories, those unconscious memories, to consciousness. Mm-hmm. For instance, in the womb, is that something we want to talk about?
No,
now?
Please. No, this is also a big part of your story. So, yeah, tell us.
Yeah, I think everything, by the way, I think everything is part, you don't realize, but I think everything is part of something for you. I mean, God didn't create any single person that was, you know, not important in this world.
And what may not make sense today will make sense sometime in the future.
Right, and even if you feel inferior, as I do, by taking the spiritual route, you kind of helps you feel, you know, important because you're now important in the eyes of the Creator. But I went back in this therapy to awaken things. I cured my own migraine headaches. I still have muscle pain, but I cured from foods that I ate. But I cured my own migraine headaches by going back to, you know, in the birth canal, which is kind of quite amazing. Yeah. And then I was back at a three-month period when I, not that long ago, just recently remembered my own abortion, and there was a twin with me. And this is not unusual. There have been people who've been on the on Oprah's show who talked about, while they're in the womb, hearing their mothers speaking about aborting them. Yeah, because what happens is a baby's brain, maybe only a third the size of an adult, but even though it's a third of the size of an adult, the baby has connections from the lower centers, the lower brain centers, and the feeling center to the higher centers. So the brain is a computer, and the brain stores all of these memories. And so even though there was no expression of words, maybe there was some kind of grunts or groans or facial expressions when you were in the womb,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
all of that is recorded, mm-hmm. and you remember it. So when I was going back in this regressive therapy, I remembered what happened after when I was born and in the hospital room. They took me to my mother, and I remember the exact words, which were recorded in my brain. And the exact words were, "Take that ugly baby away from me."
Wow.
Now, I didn't have any of those memories to 2006, but that created within me just the fact, maybe not the words, but the fact that I was taken away. You know, she just put her hand up and said, "Go away," basically.
Mm-hmm.
that created in me already a sense of rejection.
Total abandonment.
Total abandonment.
Yeah.
And in the womb, there's a communication that goes on between the mother and the fetus.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a mental telepathy, and if something disconnects, the fetus knows. It's not just, the environment that creates that feeling of rejection. The fetus actually knows. And when you go back and feel those feelings, whether it's frustration, rage, anxiety, terror, panic, you know. And it's opening up a can of worms, and it's not for the faint at heart. But when you remember, some people, what you do is you start off with childhood memories, and then gradually you kind of find the pre-birth memories on your own.
And that's the core of it all.
The core really, that's the core of it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really what you do is you wind up in life trying to get approval and love from your mother and father when you never can get that because it was never available to you in the first place. Mm-hmm. But what you do is you go ahead, you become a scientist like me, you write all these papers.
And you make sense of it later in life.
Right. You try and become an author and write these books, but you have to come to the point. And you come to the point finally after all of your therapy, if you do it young, you're much better off, that you realize that you're never going to get back what was lost and that it becomes very, very sad memories for you. So I have these very, very sad memories of all of the childhood. But, you know, I'm working on the movie trailer with Chris Hatcher, who's the producer in Austin. We're working on Divinely Inspired. And we're putting in, he asked me for photographs of my parents, and I was literally bawling and crying because I'm trying to hang on to those few good memories, but even though the bad memories were there, they brought me to this place, and I'm grateful to my parents. In fact, the last conversation that we had, I said I want to dedicate this movie trailer to my parents and my brother, my older brother who died in 1989 of leukemia.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's kind of like a mix.
You
really don't know what to do because it's kind of a mix in how you feel.
Yeah. Well, there's a point where you just have to accept what was and what wasn't and just move on from there. And I think that's where that, you know, until you can really just let go and surrender to that, then you know, you're still going to struggle with it and have pain around it.
But it takes a lot, Juanita, because you grow up in a dysfunctional family, it's not the same as growing up in a loving family.
Oh, no, I understand. And it's really interesting that, you know, we don't typically think of a non-nurturing environment, family environment like that, to be abusive and to be that destructive to the psyche. You know, we most commonly think of physical abuse or just overt abuse like that to cause damage, but not true.
Right. Mm-hmm. Emotional is just as strong, maybe even stronger
maybe
at
even
times.
Maybe even stronger, yeah.
Yeah, because they say that stress could be one part physical, but nine parts, it could be the mental stress, the emotional stress that we're under.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a person who has that kind of background like me, what happens is that when you're all of this dysfunction and neurosis really it creates in your actually in your bones. You have to literally break bones to get through all this, but it creates in your body this kind of bad energy, and it's always there pushing you on. And
it's like a dark cloud.
Yeah,
it's in your cells.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
But if you go the route of spirituality, eventually it leads you to becoming grateful, and it helps you get back and tackle, you know, some of the things that you went through, and then you can kind of let them go. The spirituality really helps you do that.
Now, how did your bipolar disorder, how did this all come into fruition, and how were you diagnosed, and when were you diagnosed?
Well, it was back in 19... I'm not sure why the bipolar disorder... My father had depression, but bipolar disorder means you have the twins. You have both the low end, the depression, and you have the mania, which is the high end. Where, you know, a lot of people love the mania because you're really at a point where
you're on top of the world.
You're on top of the world, right? And so what happened was everything was going on merrily, and I was doing my research. I was a professor, and I was still trying to seek that approval from my parents. So what I was doing was I tried some New Age stuff, and then I started to...
Yeah, that didn't work out too well, did it?
No.
You talk about that in Divinely Inspired. I mean, that was not a good situation.
Yeah, and I started to what's called reverberate, which means that I would have these feelings, and I didn't really connect. I was not connecting to my subconscious. What I was doing was I was just connecting, but not a true connection. And sometimes I'd be standing up, and the feelings were so powerful, I would collapse and find myself on the floor. It was just, so I started to do this. Now, I don't know whether any of this led to this mania, because for a while I was seeing trees outside that didn't exist. I remember going into Macy's and looking at rings and buying these rings like a compass. And I started using the directions of the rings, the four east, north, west, south, which had symbols on it, thinking I was the Messiah or my twin sons were the Messiah. And I was just kind of taken away. And I was all of a sudden... At age 50, when bipolar disorder doesn't usually happen after age 40, it can, but most of the time it's age 40. At age 50, I was in full-blown mania with psychosis, and I had these hallucinations, delusions. I was hearing voices. I was playing chess with Saddam Hussein during the Gulf War.
Wow, you went far out there.
I was very far out there.
Yeah.
I was very far out there, and I think if it wasn't for my wife, Marcia, you know, and seeing how it was affecting her, I took a hammer, and I bought two of these watches, and then my mind was going. I was going, and this is back in 1991, and I took a hammer, and I smashed the watches, and I was fighting the voices, and I was fighting the whole mania. And then a treatment plan began in 91, and the first major bipolar episode happened. Then unfortunately in 94, late 94, and 90, then again in 95, my twin sons came down with bipolar. And I always felt that I was meant to have this bipolar because I could understand their illness.
To help them through it.
Yeah, they're not doing well.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Hi there. Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. I'm talking today with Jerry Pollack, author of Divinely Inspired, and you can find out more about Jerry and his book through his website, thirdtempleinfo.com.
But then in 95, I had other things going on, and you know, minor episodes, but then another major episode in 95 of a mixed bipolar, which was partly the manic and partly the depression side. And that one, for months, I could not sit still for just a few seconds. And then in March of 1995, I swallowed 200 pills.
And this was your suicide attempt.
And that was my suicide attempt. And if it wasn't for the divine miracle of God coming to my Marcia, they were 45 minutes away, Marcia, my youngest daughter, Erin, and they were ordering they were shopping and they were ordering their meal. And I was back at home 45 minutes away and had swallowed 200 pills and had lied down in bed and felt that I was finally going to be free. And my wife said to my daughter, Erin, there's something wrong with Dad. They rushed home, and my wife woke me up, and I told her what I did, and she called the fire department, and they wanted to take me. Said, no, I won't go. And they were ready to leave. My wife pleaded with them, and I agreed, and then they took me to the hospital. It was a terrible experience, pumping your stomach, and oh, it was awful.
Mm-hmm.
And then for about 2 days, 2 to 3 days, they didn't know whether I was going to make it or not.
Wow.
And so it's been rough. And in and out of the psychiatric wards, I was hospitalized 4 times, and it's the psychiatric ward and that whole environment, and it's just awful. When they lock that door behind you.
Yeah, I imagine. Oof.
It was a tough time, but I kind of feel that all of that was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm supposed to be going through all of this.
Now, do you feel at this point, after you've had the divine intervention and your awakening, do you feel that you're cured of bipolar disorder?
Well, I had heard a voice back in 1982, and I heard that voice twice in my summer cottage, but I kind of put that on the back burner, even though I thought about it all the time. In 1998 was when I had all of the other spiritual experiences, 1998, 1999, and thereafter. Now, between 95 and 98, when I had that suicide, and I came out of that depression in somewhere around September 1995, what I surreptitiously did without my doctor knowing, or my psychiatrist knowing, he would prescribe the prescriptions. I would fill them, but I gradually stopped taking them. I would do them one at a time, slowly over time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recommend this to anybody. And with lithium, you have to be very careful.
Oh, yes, you do.
And so I started to get rid of them. And I would say by early 1998, I was starting to feel pretty well. And so for about 10 years... almost 11 years now, even maybe a little longer, I've been feeling pretty good. And the episode that occurred in 95, so that makes it even longer. But the psychiatrists do not speak about cure. What they speak about is going into some kind of remission.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that about 25% of bipolar patients can go into remission.
Isn't that interesting? Now, do you, at this point, do you try to keep your life especially balanced so you don't swing into extremely stressful states that may sort of trigger bipolar?
Well, actually, people with bipolar should do that. They should cut this, if they're going into an episode, they should cut their stimulation, they should reduce everything by about 2/3, and they should have someone they can talk to. But my spiritual has been growing, my spirituality, as I climb this spiritual ladder,
mm-hmm.
it's been growing that I feel it's, you know, it's strong enough that I don't have to do that. I don't have to. I can do everything. I'm 67, but I live just on a few hours sleep, and that's like a death sentence. If you don't get your sleep when you have bipolar, that could trip you into mania.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think the spirituality is so strong in me, and I don't mean it in a bad way to put anybody else down, but I think for me, I've kind of, you know, I keep moving on this spiritual ladder, and that's what keeps me strong.
Now, I know part of the spiritual ladder for you in you know, keeping stepping up this ladder is the Ten Commandments and how close you live your life to the Ten, right?
Yeah, I'm flawed. I don't want your listeners to have an idea. I'm totally flawed, and I think the Ten Commandments are one of the most impossible things that you can do. And I check myself and use it as a moral guide, but I go astray, and I have gone astray, and I've gone astray in Divinely Inspired, if you read that, and I've gone astray in Messiah Interviews. You climb, and then you might fall down, then you climb. As you become more and more spiritual, it's easier to get up off the ground, and it's easier to get back up on the ladder and climb further up. But the Ten Commandments are my moral compass, yes.
Well, you know, it's an interesting point that you just made, because spirituality does not guarantee an easy life. You know, it basically, I think, from what I hear you saying and from what I've experienced, those are tools, and that's your strength to pull you through those dark times or when you stumble and fall.
Yeah, it is. And I think for people who had some rough times, you kind of have to resolve your feelings as well as have your spiritual track, because that can bring you to inner peace. It's not as bad as, you know, I was in an Al-Anon group, not for any particular reason, but someone who I had encountered in New Age therapy, She told me to go to an Al-Anon group, which is the Friends of Alcoholics. And I remember one woman saying that even when the person is dry, the personality of the individual is the same. The wet alcoholic and the dry alcoholic mm-hmm. still have the same personality. Mm-hmm. But when you go through spirituality, it's different because you're moving in a direction where you're keeping both feet on the ground, but you're grabbing onto heaven as well. And so even though it doesn't promise you a Garden of Eden, and even though you still it's like Kabbalah. Kabbalah was there was a great rabbi in Brooklyn. He died when he was 94, and he said something which was very interesting about the Kabbalah. He said that the Kabbalah offers you the geography of life. So if you looked at a map with all the dots, you still have to connect all the dots. The Kabbalah doesn't do that for you. You still have to connect the dots. So in life, you have to still go through everything. You can have all the spirituality in the world, but that'll help you deal because you're grabbing onto heaven and you're refusing to be totally pulled down by whatever that situation is coming up in the present for you. But you're still going to have those situations. Life is full of unexpected turns and events. Who knew that I was going to get bipolar disorder at age 50?
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you don't have your spirituality and you face those difficult times, then you're going to have a much, much harder time, because if you haven't prepared for those crises periods, then it's going to be much more difficult. If you have spirituality, you'll be able to deal with whatever is coming your way in a much better way.
You know, it's interesting because that's so timely. Well, it's just talking about this is timely because there's so many people that are in major crisis right now with what's happening in our world economically and so forth. And it would be interesting just to hear from you some suggestions on how people can build that trust, whether they already are on a spiritual path or not, you know, how they can build that trust in the divine that really everything, it's going to be okay. Or I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think one thing, if I look at my own experience, I would say that I would never have known that this complete descent, this complete downfall that I had, I never would know, had I not, you know, survived the suicide, I would never know that the descent is actually part of an ascent. So even though people are having such difficult times today, that if they could view this tough times as something that, you know, it's going to be part of something upwards in the future. So that would be point number one, I think. Point number two is that I think God created a faith, even though he's not on the public stage as he was back in biblical times, he created a fail-safe plan, the Messianic Age, and therefore where, you know, we get an opportunity where we're healed and we get a chance to live again, and where you have food, shelter, clothing, employment, you have all of these things. So that's another point.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the easiest way that I found, I just finished writing a short article for a blog tour that I will do for Divinely Inspired in February. And I wrote a little article on the spiritual ladder, and I think I said several things, but one of the things I think I started with, and I think this is the easiest way to start, and first you have to say to yourself, if you're a logical person, I'm just going to give it a shot. The other way really hasn't helped me. I'm out of a job. I'm losing my house.
Yes.
So if I'm a logical person, and even if you're a spiritual person and you're having really, really tough times, I think the easiest way to start is not necessarily a temple or church. The easiest way to start is taking a solitary walk and going out and talking to God. And even though he's not talking to you, he's hearing you. And do that for a while and keep talking to him. Don't give up, because a lot of people, because of their background, will tend to want to give up very easily. But keep talking to him. And if you're already on a spiritual path, you're going to get answers. Look very, very closely at your life, at what's going on day to day, and you'll see that you're going to get answers. And even though I can't promise that, I believe God's listening to us, you and I, Juanita, right now, and hearing this conversation. And if there's something inside of us, there's a flame, a pure spark that if we activate it, we're activating that spirituality. God put it there for us to discover it on our own, because the best things in life are when you discover it on your own. But so if you don't feel anything after, you know, a couple months of this walking, which is what I wrote in the article, then there's something wrong with your spirituality. You need to go back and start improving on the Ten Commandments. You need to now, you know, go and help a little bit, do something to help other people. You have to examine yourself in the mirror so that you can activate that spark or that pure flame. In Buddhism, they call it kernel, and in Judaism, it's called the pintel yid. It's a very, very pure point that you're trying to ignite. So if you don't get, if you're not spiritual or nothing's happening, you got to go back and examine yourself. It's like, I heard this recently too. It's when you're in a cold room with a group of people, you can either warm yourself by putting on a fur coat, or you can light a fire to help everybody else in the room.
Beautiful.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're all frozen to some degree. I'll give you another thing. I love to, you know, hear these things and try and remember them, but Michelangelo, he not only painted, but he did these beautiful sculptures.
Yeah.
And someone once asked him, how did you do such beautiful sculptures? And his answer was, I think, one of the most beautiful I've ever heard. He said, I saw an angel trapped in the marble, and I carved and carved to set her free.
Wow.
And I think that's what my bipolar and all these hard times we go through, they're taking away our liberty. They're taking away our freedom, because surviving without a job and, you know, your marriage going astray, or you're losing your home or foreclosure or whatever it is, your freedom has been taken away. And you have to, you know, God helps them who helps those who help themselves. So you've got to go out there and you've got to do your part. You know, God isn't on the public stage anymore, because the ancient Israelites, they kind of blew it. And so He will come back, but right now we've got to restore that covenant. And so if you return to Him, that's what it says in King Solomon's, one of his books. If you return to Him, He'll return to you.
Now, do you think, it sounds to me what you're saying really is step out of yourself. You know, we've become so me and I centered that, you know, that could be one of the biggest leaps we have to make, a step out of ourselves. And I'm hearing service, and I'm hearing community.
Yeah, and be charitable, because if you don't hear the cry of the pauper, then when you cry out to God, He's not going to hear you.
No one will listen, right?
Yeah, no. So you don't want to hurt anybody. You have to because nobody, as my wife says, nobody has the right to hurt you, either physically, emotionally, mentally. Nobody has the right to hurt you. You have to kind of take a step backwards. You have to have a little compassion. You have to basically try and improve your character a little bit. If God sees that you have some future potential, if He sees some future potential that you're going to try and become spiritual, then He'll be around there to help you. You can expect it. As you climb that ladder and you get up that ladder, you can expect His help. You can demand His help. You can challenge Him and demand His help. I hope He's listening right now.
Yeah.
But you can. And I go out there and I walk and I do. And I said, why? I say to him, I said, look, I've been working hard, very hard on all of this stuff and leading a moral life. It's up to you to help me with all my non-moral outcomes. So why aren't I selling any of my books?
Yeah. So the more steps we take, the more support will be there.
The more support will be there. And if you keep, I think, honestly, I'm feeling like I don't want to give numbers, but I think I'm up around 75 to 80% up that ladder. And I'm at the point where, you say to yourself that God, if you ask, well, yeah, it's possible. You can think about it. Your mind says that God might do something for you. Well, my head is that God will do something for me. And I believe that, you know, people say, well, it's possible there'll be a Messianic age. My head, there will be a Messianic age. So you reach a point where everything is as it should be. Everything is supposed to happen the way it's supposed to happen. And that, you know, God didn't come out here as a dictator. He gave us free will. He didn't dictate to us. He gave us free will, and that free will allows us to believe in him or not believe in him. So the simplest thing, I would suggest, you can go to the church and you can go to the synagogue, you can go to the mosque, that's fine. But if you're not developing the goodness and sincerity in your heart, then you can be as religious as you want to be, but
right.
God knows that you're not.
Right, the intention.
It's the intention in your heart that's the most thing. I don't care what a person's station is in life. He could be a janitor. And what's in the person's heart, to me, is the most critical of all.
And we're almost at a time right now where that type of integrity, where the thoughts and the heart have to really merge. You know, we're being called at this point to maintain that integrity. And I don't know. That's what I think.
I think so. I think you're right, because if we don't, what's happening? The technology is racing at lightning speed, and we can destroy this world.
Yeah.
And that was the prediction a long time ago that that the Messianic Age would come at a time when the world was capable of destroying itself. And we've gone down a terrible path, and we don't treat each other right as human beings. You see all of this avarice, and you see all this greed, you see all this power, people chase money. It's just, I don't know what to make of it. It's just moving so fast, you can't keep up with it. And what you have to try and do is get your little corner of your world somehow, and get that little corner and develop it and strengthen it, and embolden it.
Make that your safe space.
And make that your safe space, because that's the only way you're going to be able to deal in this crazy world.
Yeah. Well, it certainly is spiraling down, but, it makes me think to what you've said earlier in our talk today, is the descent is part of the ascent. So the spiral downward is a necessary part of us getting to that higher level of integrity.
I totally feel that way now.
Yeah.
And I think also to feel that God has not deserted us, that he's, even though he's in heaven, and he still has the stewardship of the world, and that he's created this fail-safe plan, that, this was an imperfect experiment, but there is this Messianic Age, and that if we do our part to become spiritual, we do our part to improve our character, we'll be part of that. And so, especially when you're ill and you've got a terminal illness and you're thinking, oh, my God, this is it. If you haven't got any spirituality,
it's going to be pretty dramatic.
Yeah. You can be a humanist. You can be someone who's an atheist and a humanist, someone who's really a good person, and I applaud that person. But I think there's a difference between a person who's a good person, like a humanist who doesn't believe, and someone who's a good person with spirituality. And I think that difference is that that God offers his fragrance to all, but his wine is reserved for those who are righteous and wish to be led by him or guided by him. You taste his wine. You have a right to expect his assistance if you have the spiritual, if you follow his track and your own spirituality through him. And he's looking after the humanist, not necessarily the hardcore atheist who's telling everybody not to believe, but he's definitely looking after the person who's a humanist and who's doing good things but doesn't believe. He has his eye on him or her as well. But there's a difference. There's a difference, because the spiritual ladder gives you that difference.
So interesting talking with you again, Jerry.
I'm glad that we had the opportunity. I never knew. I didn't have a clue as to what was going to come out in this conversation.
I know. We could probably talk every week and never have a problem filling up our time.
No, I don't think so. I really don't. And I love to talk with you, Anita. I really do. And I really so appreciate the opportunity here on Inside Scoop Live.
Yeah, no problem. Absolutely. Well, I mean, as I said the last time we talked, I know that we will talk again. And we did. And I have the same feeling today that we will be talking again sometime in the future.
I hope so.
Yeah. So
I know so.
The
spiritual.
So let's mention to listeners again, I think the easiest way to tell them about your website is thirdtempleinfo.com.
Correct.
Correct, okay.
With the third spelled out, T-H-I-R-D.
Yes, thirdtempleinfo.com. Yes. Both books, Messiah Interviews and Divinely Inspired, which we were talking about today, both can be ordered online through your website.
Or through Amazon, through Barnes & Noble. You can order it at any bookstore. Hopefully libraries will have it.
Yeah, absolutely. Need it. Yeah. So you're all over the place.
And one thing I didn't mention the last time we talked. First, if someone's having a problem and they can't afford the book, then I will, it'll be printing costs plus shipping, and that'll be it. And if someone's having an extreme problem where, they lost their job and they really are not doing well at all, I'm not interested in the money. I'm interested in the message. I will send them complimentary copies. Now watch, you're going to get all these.
Yeah, really? Your publisher's not going to be very happy with that.
Well, fortunately, I'm both the author and
that's right.
And the publisher, so.
Well, that's very, very nice of you. And, that just goes to show what you're all about, Jerry, and that you...
Yeah, I think it can help people. I think it's a message of hope. It's something that I believe can help people. And it's not a complex message. It's a spiritual message, and it's just something that I think will help. And there's so many people who are forgotten in our society, and I think it will help. It's so hard to break through with books these days, with so many books and so many authors and so many good books.
Absolutely. And, there's so many seeds that are planted within us along the way. And sometimes, works like this will just inspire and ignite what you were talking about, that flame inside of us. So, I think that your books, both of them, especially Divinely Inspired, really has the power to transform. So let's just encourage everyone to just go to your website, have a look at it, see if this information resonates with them, and just go from there.
Okay. Yeah. I better stop talking because I know we've overdone it again.
Oh, you know how it is. Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, Jerry, so nice to talk with you again. Please give my best to your wife. I wanted to kind of have you talk a little bit about her in this interview, but you know what? We're going to save that for next time.
Okay.
And we'll just close. So thanks again.
You're welcome.
Okay. All right, listeners, that's been Jerry Pollack for his second interview here. We were talking today about Divinely Inspired, Spiritual Awakening of a Soul, and this is his latest book, just reissued here in January of 2009, and you can go to Jerry's website, thirdtempleinfo.com, for all sorts of information on both books. So I want to thank you once again for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson. Until next time.